This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey everyone, Mr. Devil here, Kenny Danico, three-time Stanley Cup champion of the New Jersey Devils, and you're listening to the Uncle Puckers New Jersey Devils podcast with Chris, Dan, Bobby, and Tony, the Uncle Puckers. Let's go Devils!
Yes, let's go Devils, into the playoffs, no, that's not happening, but we are the Uncle Puckers. It's Tony, Bobby, I'm Chris, and we have our friend Tim Wood sitting in with us tonight, so welcome, Tim. How are you, buddy?
Good. Thanks for having me, guys. Fun to join. Playing golf tomorrow, just like everyone else on the Devils. So I'm pretty excited about that.
Now, Tim, tell us, like, how did you become a Devil fan? What was your introduction into this fandom of ours? I should say.
Yeah, I'm a Jersey kid. You know, I grew up in Cranberry, playing my whole life, and. You know, I didn't really have a team. Actually, when I got kind of good, I was going out to Philadelphia because there wasn't really anything in Central Jersey. And every kid on my team, like, I just hated every single one of them. I was like, I cannot be a Flyers fan because everyone in my town was a Flyers fan. So then Johnny Mac scored that goal in '88, and my dad let me stay up late for that. And I was just like, you know what? This is it. This is the team I'm picking.
What year did you say, Tim?
What was that?
'98, you said?
'88, when John McClain scored on Dan Bang when they made the playoffs the first time. My dad let me stay up late for that game, and that was it. I'm a Devils fan for life now.
Nice. And now you're amongst you're down a little further south. So are you amongst mostly what, Capital fans now?
Yeah. So it's a weird place. So like the local rink, and like there isn't much hockey around where I am. It's kind of somewhere between Philadelphia and DC again. So when I came down here, my nephew plays. This is my brother's house, and when he started playing, we'd go to a local rink and I'd skate around with him. Everybody was wearing Flyers jerseys, and I was like, I can't let this happen. So I got him an Ovechkin jersey. So they jumped on the Caps bandwagon, and you know, they wound up working out pretty well for them a couple of years ago. So it is Travis country, but you know, DC is probably about 45 minutes, and it's a pain in the ass to get to. I'm an old man now. I'd much prefer sitting on my ass with a
beer in my hand. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Oh. I mean, Bobby's in Pennsylvania, so Bob, you know what it's like to be around Flyer fans.
All the time. Yeah.
So, Tim, you're what, Maryland?
I'm doing Bobby's language right now.
Yeah, it's rough. Yeah.
You're in Maryland now, Tim?
Yeah, I'm in Maryland. I'm in Northwest Maryland. I'm like 20 minutes from Gettysburg, just right across the Pennsylvania border.
We lived up in West Virginia for a few years. My dad used to work for the Redskins, actually, for a time, and he used to actually, everything was out of Maryland there. All the Redskins shit was out of Maryland. Everything kind of ran out of there. So we used to go to Maryland all the time.
Yeah, that was they were in Landover, right? I think.
Yeah,
and I think their offices actually are still in College Park, even though that stadium has moved around a little bit.
Yeah, he worked for Jack King.
And then the Caps were moving to Virginia, and then they weren't moving to Virginia. That was a lot of drama down here. So.
Well, it's the same with the Commanders, right? They were moving back to Virginia, and then for some, now there's a new lease that they're looking at in the greater DC area. Yep. So, I mean, they're all over the place.
It's a very strange place. It's a cool area. You know, I was living in an apartment in New York, and you know, I have a 70-pound pit bull. We weren't getting outside much during the pandemic, and then, you know, I'm on a farm here. I'm on a 50-acre farm. We have a pool and a barn. We got a tractor.
Oh, dude.
Tractor stuff. cool.
We'll go party at Tim's farm.
I know. Like, it's the best thing. Just crank that volume up. You know, I'm getting alerts on my iWatch and be like, your volume's too loud. I'm telling Siri, I'm like, you have no idea the concerts I've been to. So I'm not. This is going away.
What kind of music are you into?
I'm pretty firmly in that sort of 90s grunge rock, hip hop. You know, Wu-Tang is probably top 10 for me.
Nice.
Metallica. When I was married, I went through a country phase, and I'm glad out of that now. But
I'm
Sirius XM. It's pretty much Lithium and Rock the Bells are my two stations.
I don't know Rock the Bells. I don't think I've ever listened to that one.
Is it a Nap only station?
It's like LL Cool J is his kind of thing, and it's honestly like 90s, early 2000s hip hop. It's awesome.
We saw LL Cool J.
It's just banger after banger. You know, it's a lot like Lithium. Like, they'll go on runs and just like this is like me smoking cigarettes out of my car, driving like up and down the turnpike as a kid.
I said this story before when I was taking my son up to the game, to see the Vegas game, and he, you know, likes a little bit of the, you know, was starting to get into like Foo Fighters and Nirvana and stuff. And I had Lithium on basically the whole time, and he was just blown away. He was like, this is like one of the greatest eras of music. I was like, yeah, you know, you don't realize it when you're in it, but this is the shit that was on the radio when we were in high school, dude. This is, you know, we didn't have satellites and phones and iPads and, apps and shit to just download music on, I wish we had that when we were kids.
You remember recording stuff off the radio, and if you missed a song, you just
absolutely,
you just missed it. You put the tape in, you had like, you know, play and record going, ready to go, and the DJ would always cut the beginning out and the end out, and you're just like, God damn it, man, shut up for a second.
Remember the first boombox I ever had that had the dual cassettes. So you record the cassette that you're listening to onto a blank tape and give it to your buddy. Coolest thing ever.
You do it in fast forward too, right?
Yeah, you can do that.
You do it like three quarters of the time. Yeah.
I was just talking the other day actually about the same kind of the same thing on this other show I do about the prices of tickets back then. Like back when we were in high school, like you would go see like Nirvana played at the City Gardens for $7, Butthole Surfers for like $9, you know. I mean, just crazy prices back then. You look at now where you're paying even to see bands you don't really care about, you'd have to fucking pay like $50 to go see. You know, back then I was going through these old flyers, all the City Garden flyers. I was like, man, it's like $5, $7. And I mean, it's bands that you would pay now $100 to go see,
sure.
Easily.
Yeah, it's like the fees that Ticketmaster charges are like 10 times that now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
To go somewhere. They're getting sued, I think, or there's some sort of class action or something like that against Ticketmaster.
There has been, right? They've been doing that. Like, I remember Pearl Jam was coming down on them for a while, and a bunch of other bands were saying they didn't want their stuff sold through Ticketmaster because, you know, they're a monopoly and they jack up all the prices and all the other bullshit.
The bots buy them all out. And by the time you get
another thing. Yeah. The bots buy them out and then sell them for a fortune. But, all right, how about we talk a little hockey? How about that?
Yeah, let's get into it.
Well, we got the playoffs starting tomorrow, which, you know, I'm excited about, even though the Devils aren't in it. But let's talk a little Devils first. Bobby, you have some stuff you want to talk about Tom Fitzgerald's interview. I want to go about that, so take it away.
Yeah, I thought we'd just kind of start some of the highlights of his little presser, I guess, after all the exit interviews. These are just a few of the highlights I took from it. Tim, if you listen to it or read it and you've got any others, feel free to jump in here. From the top, he's got a lot of belief in the core still, of course, and that he believes last year was no fluke. I think, by the way, that most of this press conference was, I mean, lip service in a way. I mean, there's nothing shocking here. This is kind of like everybody should know exactly what the things that he's saying here. He believes he knows exactly where he needs to upgrade the team now. He went on to say that they're a fast team when they think and play quick.
Yeah.
And that was an interesting quote to me because everybody knows they were a fast team and they are still capable of being a fast team. But to say when they think and play quick. So
I think I believe when I heard it, there. Well, and also the system, yeah. But I also took the fact that these guys just all year, like, they were not getting the pucks off their stick quick. They weren't making those fast decisions to push the puck up the ice as quickly as they were last year. They were, you know, so many times in their own end, dicking around with the puck, looking for a pass instead of just getting it out, trying to get a break. And I think that's kind of maybe what he was talking about with that. Like, you know, they're not, even though they have the speed, they're not being put into positions where they
can use.
The
underlying message here was that we didn't utilize an asset that we have properly.
Right.
You know, he mentioned several times about the players buying in beyond the ice. Like, you mentioned the weight room, I think, three or four times as an example.
I know, I noticed that.
So he's definitely got some players he thinks maybe aren't putting in the extra that it really kind of takes to be a top echelon player. I don't know who he's calling out, of course, but he mentioned that quite a bit. Yeah.
You notice what really stuck out to me on that? If you notice, is one thing that he said out of all that, because I feel like a lot of it was just bullshit. Like you said, it was just kind of like, you could just see the disappointment. He looked deflated, I thought, completely. But he said something about the dress code on the team, which I found really kind of fascinating, actually, because about too much people taking advantage of, you know, you give a little, they take a lot, whatever.
Right.
And I really, that's the one thing that caught my mind. And I started thinking about some of the younger players we have on our team, some of the bigger players we have on our team. And I don't know, for some reason that really, I believe there's a discipline problem maybe in some of this stuff. You know, we had Lou, obviously, for all those years who, whether people like it or not, man, it worked. And the people bought into it. You know, I hear people all the time being like, oh, Lou was this, Lou was that, the newer fans. Right. But when I hear the old players, man, they said you knew what was expected of you. You had a role and you knew like what your expectations. You couldn't come on. Like, you couldn't, 5 o'clock shadow, you were in trouble. I mean, Lou sat in the front of the bus. He sat in the front of the bus and watched you walk on and looked you up and down. Everything from your collar to your hair.
I think
when he said that.
I agree with you, Tony. The structure and the discipline, I think, were two things that he was calling out, I think. And like you said, too, about the weight room and stuff like that, there were a few things that I kind of took away of him, you know, not happy with, I guess, of course, the product on the ice, but not happy with how some of these guys, I think, were handling themselves off the ice, I think. And just kind of maybe too carefree of an attitude and not taking the job as seriously as you should, or if you want to win a cup. Tim, what'd you make of that?
Yeah, that, and to Bobby's point about the actual on ice play, like, that was, a lot of it was kind of lip service, but I got the same thing that you guys did. That sort of, there's this, even Travis Green brought up the weight room too, you know, and it's like, there's this underlying tone of like, there's a bit of a country club kind of attitude going on. And I also got the vibe that a lot of these guys, because they kept bringing up maturity, and I kind of read into that, there's maturity on the road, or they're not making mature decisions about being professionals. So I kind of read into that like, they're going out on the road and they're not concentrating, and that's not folks. And that kind of then, you know, you sort of tie all that together with the on-ice play, and you're like, you know, they're giving up the first goal every time. You know, that's, you know, that kind of, I think that becomes the thing. And I, you know, I know it's a bit of a cliche what he said about, what you permit is what you promote, which is an interesting quote. You know, I think it was a lot of lip service, but what I really got, the same thing that you guys did, is that there's a bit of a cultural kind of softness going on.
Yeah, and I think that's the general theme that we're talking about here with him as a round out here, because, you know, he goes on to say, of course, about the maturity that we got to grow from this year, learn how to kind of win and be the type of players that you need to be to win a cup. And then he went and referenced again that they're still the sixth youngest team in the league. Yeah. So he is kind of taking all that, right? And he's kind of putting it all in a package for you with a little bit of frustration behind it. And he goes on to say that, you know, they're like, who do you want? What's the type of players you want on this team? And he says, hockey players, quote unquote, you know, those that work hard every day, have a passion for the game, was his big thing. And he wants them tough to play against, but not just in the physical sense that we've been preaching all year, like everything from blocking a shot to being hard on the boards, just a tougher out, harder to play against in general. And one of the coolest things he mentioned to me, and I agree with this completely, I think he even specifically mentioned it from like a third line, the momentum line. Maybe he didn't say the third line, but he's like, we need another one of those momentum lines coming back. And I couldn't agree more. I mean, 2 years ago, maybe it was the third line, maybe it was the fourth, probably the fourth. You know, what that line brought was such a bonus over what
he
most
said. Maybe
teams
two,
have.
Maybe yeah. two momentum lines.
That's
he
right.
said, you know, like
that's
a,
right.
You know, there definitely is a culture, and that's a, you know, a buzzword that so many GMs and analysts and reporters like to use, but it is a real, real thing.
Yeah, totally.
When you know, you talk about the New England Patriots, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, love them, hate them, indifferent to them. It doesn't matter. They were a dynasty, unlike anything that I think we'll ever see again. And it was the way that they carried themselves. And you could hear from players, new players, they come on that team. And as soon as they got in that dressing room, it was a completely different culture. It was not, there was no fucking around. There was no bullshit. There was, you were here for one reason only, and that is to win. And if you're here for any other reason, there's the door. And a lot of great teams, Tampa Bay had it when they were winning cups. There's a culture. And when a head coach stays the same, like John Cooper, that culture is, no, you know, from the time that they won their first cup right up till today, it is just ingrained in them. We had it back in the 90s, mm-hmm. early 2000s. You know, you came here and it was a business. It was a job, and it was treated as such.
Right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that's what, you know, and when you put that work in and the wins start to come, well, then that's where the fun begins. But it's not all fun. All right. I mean, it shouldn't be all fun. It's not a fucking day camp. It's, you know, you're playing a sport for a living, getting paid a lot of money to do it.
And again, I think that's where Lou came into that whole business thing. That's where it all, I mean, I really believe it stems from all that.
Well, people want to go shit on Lou, you know, hey, he's in the playoffs right now. We're not.
Yeah,
that's right. So, very true.
And Jesse Bratt brought up the maturity thing, which I thought was very interesting when a player was vocal about that, saying we were very, and he was making it more, we were very immature about the decisions we were making on the ice. You know, just we seemed like a young team that just, you know, didn't know what we were doing. And he felt, you know, a lot like, well, but we do know what we're doing, and there's no excuse for that. But, you know, back it up to like the weight room and getting tougher and having, you know, that kind of, who's the first guy you're hearing about that Fitzgerald's trying to sign? Curtis McDermott. Like, he wants him back in the lineup. Right. Like, he wants this guy on this team, and I get it. I want him on the team. But, you know, that's definitely something that was lacking until he got here.
Yeah, I mean, we got to have it. We've been saying for two seasons now, you know, we need two guys like that, actually. We need a few of them. But yeah, we definitely, you know, I think it's either going to be, I believe he'll be back. I don't think Smith will be back, but I think one of those two will be back, and I think it'll be McDermott.
Now, Tim, you know, we talked about the four main goalies that we're looking at, a couple of head coaches that are, you know, being circled around. If you could have your druthers, what coach, we'll start with coach, what coach would you want? And is there anybody that we haven't mentioned on the show that you can think of, please?
I think Berube is the guy that kind of checks all the boxes. And again, that's kind of a corny phrase, but I think he makes a lot of sense. You know, he's one, he's tough. He brings that kind of character. You know, you look at the way he played, and I think he kind of can bring that into and bring that sort of more business-like culture into the Devils. I think there are a few guys that may be a little bit interchangeable in that regard. I don't know what he's like systems, X's and O's wise, but I also think like a lot of the assistants actually deal with the X's and O's and stuff like that as well. Like you look at, you know, you talk about the speed that this team has, and they were a rush-based team, and they kind of surprised people 2 years ago, and they generated so much of their offense off the rush, but when they didn't, they were able to actually maintain in-zone presence. With losing Burnett, it seemed like we lost that in-zone presence. All of our chances seemed to be rush-based. They're one-and-dones, block shot, and it was back out of the zone. We just lost so much of that in-zone presence. That also is the toughness that goes into conditioning, that goes into winning board battles, that goes into really, really being a pain in the ass to play against. So I think it would be Berube. Sullivan would be a great choice if Pittsburgh lets him go. But from what Dubas was saying, it doesn't sound like Sullivan's going anywhere. And I think Crosby loves him. Crosby's not going anywhere. Out of the Vox choices, I love this Carl guy in Denver. He seems like he's really got his shit together, and he's a younger coach. He's 34 or 35.
I don't know anything about him.
He is David Carlson. He just won the national championship with Denver.
Okay.
He's won 2 in 3 years. He was projected to be like top 10 pick and had heart problems. He has that the heart wall is thick, I think. So he couldn't. So he had to retire playing, so he became a coach. So he's a really good coach. And I like, you know, college hockey is a little bit different because it's a lot more sort of chip and chase. And but what he can do at Denver is he didn't have Will Smith or Carter Gauthier or any of these high-end prospects, and they still won the national championship. They actually shut those guys down. They won 2-0 in the national championship game. So he would be a great choice. Mm-hmm. Also, like Rand Pecknold, who's the coach of Quinnipiac. I think I mentioned him to you before.
Yeah, you did.
He recruited me to college where I played, and then he left my first year. I was like, what the hell? But, out of the box stuff, then there's, I think his name's Bromberg, I think, in Finland or Sweden or something like that. I don't know much about him, but I've seen his name bandied about. But I don't think Fitz is going to go out of the box. I think he's going to be safe, reliable, simple. And I wouldn't be surprised if Travis Green winds up being back in the coach's chair either. Like,
well, you know, Travis Green, I actually listened to his exit interview and kind of I liked a lot of the stuff he was saying. And, you know, he kind of made it sound like there was a lot of things that he wanted to do differently with these guys that he couldn't, that he even mentioned, like, they haven't seen my whole personality. He mentioned training camp a lot and how much he is a big proponent of training camp and how you have to install and build that culture from day one. And, you know, a little bit like making it sound like, you know, hey, give me the opportunity and I can do something with this. I'm still on the fence about Travis Green. You know, I don't know. I mean, I know Luke Hughes spoke very highly of him in his exit interview. Mm-hmm. You know, so it does seem like he, you know, the guys like him and they have a good rapport with him. But I'm not sure about that. Where are you guys, Bob, Tony, and Tim, on Travis?
Go ahead, B.
Yeah, I'm really not sure yet on Travis. I mean, I didn't see enough. I didn't see a team respond enough. And I don't mean, obviously, we talked a lot about systems change and you can't, you know, globally do it with 22 games left. But that initial spark of firing coach and doing better, we thought would lead to a little bit more of a consistent run. And it just seemed like the team phoned it in at the end. And maybe that's a foundation of the fact that they were so bad and knew they were out of it. But I didn't like kind of the ending effort that I saw. Doesn't mean Green can put it all together if he had a whole year.
I think
year.
It's a little I agree, though. It's a little dangerous, I think, hiring Travis Green. You know, I think there is that little bit of, you know, more of a chance of having a repeat of this year.
Well, let's get into what Fitz said about the head coach, and then we can see where he fits in this. Because didn't have a ton to say. It was a little bit cryptic. He did say he wants the coach in place for the draft, which is good and understandable, of course. He wants a really good communicator, both up and down, players down and management up, good and bad, and specifically collaboration. And he even referenced himself. He's like, with me, like, really wants kind of that communication with him and how they kind of manage the players. So you definitely get a sense there that Fitzy's definitely got his hands in there.
Yeah.
A lot. He said he wants somebody who holds every player accountable, and he accented that every, you know. He did
no free
like
passes for Jack Hughes anymore? Is that it?
Potentially, or Luke even. You know, of course, Luke's situation was a little different. He was kind of thrust into a position where he had to kind of perform more than maybe expectations, but sure, any star player. Yeah. He did say he liked what he saw from Green and that he checked out a lot of his, you know, boxes, right? So the boxes are everybody knows what the boxes are. Nobody needs to go into those particular boxes. But he did go on to say he's a no-nonsense guy. Now, Chris, I didn't see the exit interview with Green. Did he seem like a no-nonsense guy? Because that is the type of coach I think this team needs. I don't
know
that that's him.
He absolutely seemed like a no-nonsense guy.
Okay.
He made his case, and I thought he did a decent job of it. And I wouldn't be, you know, I wouldn't be on the fire Fitzgerald train day one if they hire Travis Green. I'm willing to see how it plays out with a full season and a full training camp. But I mean, we talked about Craig Berube the day after he got fired from the Blues. You know, I like what Craig Berube brings. I like that stern, hard ass, accountable coach that's, you know, gonna put, you know, make sure that these guys are playing the right way. Because that was just something that we didn't see enough of this year. You know, taking shortcuts, taking shifts off, taking whole periods off, taking games off even. You know, it's just that's unacceptable. And, you know, the maturity level on this team and you know, Tony, I think, was the one that really brought it up. Like, you know, when this team first started kind of looking like this could go sideways early in the season, you know, Tony was the one saying like everything came so easy to these guys last year. You know, is it just part of that? They walked in thinking that they didn't have to earn it. They can just go and do it and it was going to come to them, and me not realizing there's 31 other teams that are out there thinking and doing the exact same thing. So.
Yeah, it was very much death by a thousand cuts, but coaching-wise,
right.
Green said all the right things, but the results weren't exactly there at the end of the season. And Bobby's point is a great point about making you know, wholesale systematic changes. You can't just do that in the middle of the season, you know, especially right. with Ruff's D-zone flood system. Like, you can't just overhaul that when that's what you're used to playing. So I don't know. Like, I don't know what his systems look like, what he preaches, but they were a little bit more defensively responsible, but they also got better goaltending. But the scoring dried up. And I don't know if the scoring dried up was because we're running out like six AHLers in our bottom six. You know, it's and Jack's playing with one arm. You know, so there's just so many different little pieces that fed into the season falling apart on them. But I think, you know, culturally and, you know, there was a country club attitude, it seems like, and it seems like that's really what it was.
Me personally, I'm just jaded by the give a new guy a chance thing lately in sports for my teams in particular. Like, I just want a proven winner for a year or two, Stanley Cup guy, and then you go ahead and take, you know, the young kid who hasn't managed before and thinking the game different or whatever you want to do. But I just seen it backfire with the Mets. I've seen it backfire with the Devils. And for me, I just want that consistent. I know it's kind of vanilla, right? It's the same coaching pool all the time, but, you know, I just want that winning pedigree, which is my last point on the coaching here.
Yeah.
And I know why Fitzgerald wouldn't say this, because he's got candidates he wants to consider that don't fit this bill, but I would have liked to have heard something about having a Stanley Cup pedigree. Like, that wasn't one of his boxes, a Stanley Cup champion coach. And again, I know why. He's got Green sitting right next to him. He's supposedly in the running. So you can't kind of put these guys under the bus like that. But frankly, that's what I would have wanted to hear.
Yeah, I agree. I think a prerequisite for a head coach should be winning a Stanley Cup. A coach with this team, yeah, they are the sixth youngest team in the league. Having a coach that's been there and done it and taken a team to a Stanley Cup, or even just a really deep run, which Lindy Ruff did have in Buffalo, but really a cup, and knowing what it takes for a team to go on that run, not just make the playoffs, which the Devils proved is not so easy in this league. You know, points were just, especially at the end of the year in our whole division and conference in general, they were just really hard to come by. And, you know, so making it to the playoffs is hard enough. And then to go on a 2-month stretch of winning 16 games to get it done, I mean, that you have to be in it to know what it's like. And we don't have many guys on this team that have won cups. So having that coach, I think, is really something smart that he can kind of teach these guys how to do it.
You know, Chris, you brought up Brat's exit interview and how it might have been the best voice that you heard as far as the maturity and all that. And it's interesting to me that it was Brat, because if you go back to the beginning of the season, I think before game one, somewhere in preseason, it was Brat who said that we've earned the right to have this pressure on us now, you know, to be a team that's picked to be, you know, one of the top 5-6 teams to vie for a Stanley Cup. He was vocal about it then. He's vocal about it now. He did, for the most part, have a very great year and is a leader on this team. And I think he's maybe that one guy who's really gets it.
He has turned into the leader that I never thought he was going to be when he first started, but he really has. And he's a voice in this locker room that I think the guys respect and they listen to. And everything that comes out of his mouth now, I feel like this is one of the main leaders on this team. You know, I get it. Nico's got the C, but I feel like this team, look, Jack Hughes doesn't like talking to the media. He's very aloof when he's around them, but, and, you know, Nico Hischier for so many years has to go out there and just talk about how bad the team was, you know, and that can kind of get to you and stuff. But I think Jesper Bratt stepping up now and just kind of being that other voice in there, you need that. It can't just be one leader. It can't just be one guy, even though he has a C on his jersey. You know, back in Devils are winning cups, it was Niedermeyer, Brodeur, Danico, Stevens. Yeah. You had leaders in that locker room, and it's kind of what they need now.
Yeah. Christy Flannery, do you read any of her stuff from the Hockey News? A couple of pieces. And Bobby, I don't know if you're done with the
points we're making.
But just on the Brat thing, some behind the scenes stuff. You know, she was talking to Lazar and Smith and Tierney, and they basically all said, and Tierney in particular was actually quoted as saying, Brat was the most impressive person from a professionalism and work ethic position on the team, which is really surprising. And you go back to his interviews from preseason that you're talking about, like, he really was saying, you know, he really sounds like an incredibly dedicated person. Like, remember the beginning of the year, he was so fucking fast. Like, he was so much faster than everybody, just blowing past people. And he got to be even a better skater than he was last year. It was incredible. So I'm on the keep Jesper Bratt train. I'd give him an A. I'd take it from Jack, to be honest.
I take it off a lot, to be honest with you. I'd give it to him and take the A off Palat and give it to Brat. But and on a personal note, he is one of the nicest guys I've ever met in my life.
Jesper Bratt?
Yes. I met him
in Sweden.
He was so freaking nice. I mean, he's in a restaurant having dinner, and he took time. We talked, took pictures. We bullshitted for a little while. He was just a super, super nice guy.
Chris does really good Jesper Bratt impersonation, actually, too.
I do?
Yeah, you do it, the voice. Do it, Chris.
You got to do it now.
Jesper Bratt. Don't you do the frog voice? Don't you do the frog voice?
No, what are you talking about?
One of our old episodes. Never mind, but yeah, one of our old episodes, man. You were quoting a Jesper Bratt interview, and you started mocking his voice, but it was perfect.
I don't remember doing
that.
Yeah,
I'll have to dig that up. Yeah.
All right, dig that up.
I was just going along with the bit. I don't know if you did it.
It's about time you go along with the bit, Bob. Yeah, you know, right? What the fuck?
Bit Cruncher. Thank you, Tony. He plays Brad's voice. Is he like a Kermit the Frog voice?
I don't think, yeah, I guess. I don't know. Apparently, he does, and I can nail it.
You did it, Chris. It was killer, man. Joe Fano
made the playoffs.
I believe you. He did. Joe Fano made the fucking playoffs, and we're sitting around with our thumbs up.
He's been hitting us up constantly, too. Jesus Christ.
I know. We got to get him on the show. Yeah. What about goalies, Tim? Who do you like?
Oh my God, I said this today. I've been waffling this all for the past couple weeks. I don't envy Tom Fitzgerald and this job he's going to do, because the second whoever we pick gives up four goals in the first game, we're going to be like, fuck you, Fitz. You fucked up. You're fired.
Fire, Fitzy.
So I'll break it down this way. I think you talked to Chris, I think, in De Bourgeois. I think he might be my guy. And this dude, Sam, just for a burner on Twitter, talked me into Bourgeois. I think wherever he's gone, he's put up good numbers. They've been limited. And Winnipeg plays like a pretty lockdown system. But I think we can get him for 3-4 years, like $3-4 million. And that, you know, because you got to consider the cap constraints that we're going to have, because Lucin is going to need an extension. Nemec is going to need an extension. Like, thank God Mercer had a down year, because we can, you know, underpay him.
Yeah.
What I think is going to happen, I think it's still going to be Markstrom. I think, you know, he has two more years on his deal. Goalies age at a little bit older of a curve. I think, you know, and he's and look, we're all old. And it's like, people are like, he's so old, and I just like turn to dust on Twitter every time someone says something. Like,
12 years younger than me. Fuck you.
Like, I'm surrounded by children on this app. But I think I don't see any reason why he can't be successful. You know, Ullmark is great too. Saros would be amazing. Saros is pretty small and athletic, and I don't know. And he's played a lot of hockey. I don't know if he would actually hold up. And he's only got one more year, and he wants, I think, eight and a half after this. That's just not a deal that the Devils can afford. That's why I think Markstrom's going to happen, because he's cost controlled for 2 years. That gives Dawson Schmidt time to develop in the AHL. And then one of those two. I think one of those two has shown the capability that they can be an NHL-level starter. They just need more time to develop. They got thrust into things too quickly. I mean, Dawes got his hip resurfaced, and then like 3 weeks later was like our starting goalie. Like,
when he
first came up and started, you know, for the Devils, he was actually playing pretty well. But
yeah, he was.
You know, he kind of fell apart, you know, Schmidt in the playoffs last year. So I think those two have it in them. It's just, I like to kind of battle those two against each other in the AHL for Marshall to come up. Ullmark would be great. Saros would be great. They're probably going to be more expensive than Ullmark. And the way Markstrom played the last 10 games, he's the price range is going to be like a third round pick, and that's it now.
You know, there's also the you have to keep into consideration that, you know, some of these guys that we're talking about possibly even coaching, as far as like a guy like Brindamore, who, yeah, that's the biggest pipe dream that a Devil fan can have. And it's never going to happen. But, you know, for the, you know, shits and giggles and reckless speculation, like how some of these teams going into the playoffs do can also affect how the Devils, what the Devils can do. You know, like, okay, UC Soros, we knew that Tom Fitzgerald did talk to Barry Trotz during this season before the trade deadline. We also know that Barry Trotz was asking for a king's ransom. Right. And it's reported after, you know, about a week or so ago that Barry Trotz saying, hey, we're still open to negotiations with UC Soros to New Jersey. Tom Fitzgerald says the same thing. Well, if your payment to the trade value to Nashville for Soros in February was too high, what the hell do you think it's going to be if Nashville goes and, you know, makes it to a Western Conference final or a cup final or wins the cup or Conn Smythe Trophy UC Soros? Forget it. It's gone. You're not getting them. Same thing with Ullmark. You know, Ullmark has a great playoff and maybe even outplays Swayman. Maybe Boston has a different look on things. You already knew you were probably going to pay a little bit more for Boston. What are you going to pay for Linus Ullmark if he has a fantastic playoff? You know, Devil fans, if you really want Rod Brindamore, then you want the Islanders to sweep them in the first round. And then maybe, you know, because you're not going to pull him away from Carolina if they go on a run. So I think it really does come down to Lorraine Brossoit or Jacob Markstrom. And I do think it's Travis Green or Craig Berube, in my opinion. Like, I just don't know how many more guys there are that he's going to really, that I can see actually coming here to coach or to be the goalie. Does that make sense?
Yeah, definitely. And I couldn't agree more. And like I said, I don't envy Tom Fitzgerald's job, because if it goes south, it goes south. I think goalie wise, we just need a guy that can stop the fucking puck every now and then. Like,
yeah.
That was such a huge problem. I had no confidence in Vanacek stopping the puck. None.
Tim, would you be like as comfortable with a middle of the road consistent goalie on this team, or do you think we need like a top 6-7 guy?
I'm comfortable with like a top 10, top 15 guy. So yes, middle of the road, I think that's fine. And in a rotation of like a Markstrom and Allen, I think that's good. I think in front of them is where our team needs a lot more work. You know,
yeah. Well, Graves should be on the market if anybody heard Dubas talking about him. Threw him under the bus.
Tristan Jarry?
Graves. He was throwing Graves under the bus for, he said how good he was with Colorado, how good he was with the Devils, and basically didn't play anything like that for us this year, and that he's got to get stronger and tougher and get an edge back to his game and all this stuff. So I'll take him back.
Like, yeah, buddy, he didn't have an edge.
Was that you? Did you post that? With the didn't never had an edge?
It wasn't me, no, but someone else did. But okay. I was about to post the same thing. I was like, I'm somebody who took care of this. But right.
Like, you know what you got with him.
Did they not watch any film on him? Like, right. he was literally one of the worst guys at clearing the puck on the penalty kill. Couldn't get the puck out of his zone for anything. Like, the guy needs to
say
do
this
that,
to
like,
Bobby. Bobby's got a tattoo of Ryan Graves in an unmentionable place.
He has a sock.
Let me just say that.
Ryan Graves' sock.
It's his dick.
Duh.
But he only got the R and the Y in. But no, I mean, look, I liked our D-Core last year. I thought our D-Core, you know, I was never a big Severson fan, but he did have a much better year last year, and I thought he played very good in the playoffs. And, you know, just our D-Core having a fucked up system and as young as they were, and like Fitzgerald said, right, we're the sixth youngest team in the league until we trade for Jacob Markstrom, because him and Allen get us to like the sixth oldest team in the league.
Yeah. Combined 70 years old.
Oh, it's more than that, right? Oh, it is 70 years. Yeah, you're right.
So we can talk about, I don't know if you want to talk about the D-Core at all, but and what to do with that.
What's your thoughts on the D-Core?
I don't have a problem with them running back Siegenthaler, Hamilton, Hughes, Marino, Ball, Nemich, because with Dougie in the lineup, it just slots everybody down into the appropriate things. Like, all the injuries cause so much chaos with pairings and chemistry, and that goes a long way, particularly with defense. Like, if you look at Vegas last year, their D pairs had all been together for like 3-4 years. Two of the guys even played in junior together. I think it was White Cloud and whoever he was playing with. And that is so important. Like, and if you look at Luke's really good games, it was when he was playing with like Hataka or DeSimone, mm-hmm. or even Marino. Luke and Marino were actually a very good pair towards the end of the year there, in limited sample. You threw Smith on his pairing with him, and suddenly, like, he was at the bottom of, like, of every single one of those game score charts. And it's just like, why don't the coaches see that tethering Luke Hughes to Brendan Smith is not fucking working? I don't get that. I'm also a big believer in lefty, right D, and kind of having an offensive guy and a defensive guy. So,
yeah.
I think with Dougie back in the lineup, and one of the things Dougie's – sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
One of the things Dougie is really good at, everybody gives him shit because – he's not the best defenseman. That's not his game. What he's really good at, though, is puck retrievals and zone exits. He gets the fucking puck out of the zone and gets it out quickly. He's really good at that first pass. If you look at Siegenthaler, I was like I told you before we started, I'm a hockey podcast pervert, and there's this PDO cast, and they're talking about Siegenthaler, and it said he fails at zone exits almost 40% of the time. Like, that is fucking awful.
Yeah,
like,
that's crazy.
Like, that's just
and you
really
even
bad.
See that with the eye test, though. Like, Siegenthaler is the one guy I do not want back on this team.
He had a terrible year. I think there's still something in him, and his contract is just not movable. But I think if he were gone, I wouldn't object to it at all.
Tom, what
I
do
just
you
don't know who would come in for him.
Yeah, I'm not – you know, I think he can go. I think I would even – you know, you keep Smith, I guess you can move him to like a – I didn't think he was bad as a forward this year. I mean, I thought, you know, you got him as a utility player. But if either of the two, I would keep Smith as just a backup utility player.
17th defenseman.
I heard someone else say it today, and I kind of – but as with Siegenthaler, the last time I was impressed with Siegenthaler was in the playoffs last year, and I think we – you know, you remember, he actually had a good playoff last year. But besides that –
until he took the penalty.
Yeah, that penalty. That was –
got us.
But in that game even, he – if you remember, we talked about that. Like, he had a good game even that game. Yeah, but he just –
he had a big goal, I think, in that game. I think it was like one of the – I think the tying goal, I think, was Siegenthaler.
It was a big goal, yeah.
Yeah, that was that penalty.
That penalty was Tatar's fault for giving him that muffin of a pass that he had no time with.
No. That was the last time I was impressed with Siegenthaler was in the playoffs. Yeah. And even toughness wise, I personally, I said it last episode, maybe the episode before that, I think there's several changes that need to be made on this team. And I think you actually have to move some players out. Like, as much as I like, as a Devils fan, I have that fondness to like Holtz and these guys, but I think you got to move them. Tim, you mentioned Dawes and Schmidt. I would be glad if they were gone even. I don't think they're the answers. Like, I do like Dawes, and I think there's more upside with him than Schmidt now. I'm not really a Schmidt believer. I kind of felt this way last year, and now I really feel that way. Like I said, Dawes, I think as a backup maybe, but I don't know. I mean, I wouldn't mind seeing though. I think you got to move. I think you got to bring two defensemen here, two different. I mean, I've been saying I like Dougie Hamilton too, and I know I was last episode. I was defensive wise, yeah. I think he's, you know, you got to bring two decent defensemen in there. We need obviously toughness.
Even if they didn't have the year that they had, if we're just talking about taking a good team to the next step for Stanley Cup, for me, something big has to be done on the defense. I want like a stud defensive defenseman to go with all this other power that we have. I don't know who needs to move out to do that yet. We'll kind of see it as the summer goes on. But that would be to me, and this is like even if we went a round or two and didn't quite make it to the Stanley Cup, I'd be like, this is an upgrade area. It might not be a pressing upgrade area, right? Because maybe you can bring these guys back, had bad years, mix them back with their lines properly. I'm with you with, you know, Hamilton slotting everybody down. But just to get over the top, to me, that'd be one of the moves that helps put them over the top.
Yeah, I think a clear upgrade could be available for Siegenthaler or Ball. Like, I wish someone would show Ball Mystery Alaska and be like, can you watch, like, the scene where
– he's interesting,
he tells him, like, you're the big guy, dude. Like, you're fucking 6'8". Like, hit somebody. Know like, and if you watch his junior tape from the Ottawa 67s, he's an absolute menace. And it's just like, where did this guy go? And I think that's kind of coaching. I think they teach this style. Like, I don't know if you ever watch them coming to the – like, a forward's coming into the zone, kind of wrapping around. They do this thing where their stick kind of like just kind of getting in the puck lane. But they're not taking the body. Like, they're not eliminating the man. And they're just kind of following the guy around with their stick hanging out.
Like, they are one of the easiest teams to play against, in my opinion.
And on him, on Ball, by the way, before we move on, because I did hear what he said, and it just flies in contrary to everything we just said. he was like, one of the things I want to work on this season is like shooting. I'm going to work on shooting and shooting and shooting. I'm like, no. You're going to work on defense, dude. Like,
apparently
we don't need shooting.
Doesn't want to stay in the NHL very long because a guy his size, you know, trust me, he would be in this league for the next 12 years if he learned how to use his body and his size for that position. And I think instead of practicing shooting, watch Ken Danico film all summer. Just watch Danico. And that's who you should try and become.
Danico, you know, and Chara. I thought he was going to be the next coming of Chara. And he still could get there. Char kind of developed a little bit later in his
career. Char did develop later.
In his career. And Char got traded a couple times. You know, he went out of Ottawa.
And Ball's a much better skater than Char was in the beginning. So yeah, he does have that going for him. But it's just infuriating.
Because I'm like 5'9 on a good day and watching him. I'm like, you motherfucker. Like, if I was your size.
He's huge.
And what do you think of Holtz?
I don't know, man. But like Holtz has potential offensively. I don't see, like, and I think this was something that was kind of a veiled shot at Lindy Ruff when they were talking about a little bit of disproportionate punishment, I guess, is for lack of a better word, for some of the players. And I feel like that was kind of talking about Holtz, where you know, taking ice time away wasn't really being distributed evenly across the team, but some players were getting penalized a little bit more than others. And I think that was kind of about Holtz. Like, I would love to see Holtz get some run. I don't really see him making these egregious mistakes that seem to be getting him benched. Like, I've seen him make maybe a couple turnovers here and there, but like Jack Hughes throws the puck in the middle of the O-zone off a rush and makes a turnover time, and he's just right back out there. So I don't know. I feel like they're trying to make him into something he's really not. But I get the idea of, like, if he goes, he goes. Like, you know,
unless this all goes back to the discipline thing, or the, you know, maybe there's something behind the scenes, because Holtz, we were talking about this after Lindy got let go, it was still going on. You saw frustration in the front office with Holtz, you know. I just don't know. I mean, I think there's some guys you can move here that still have value, I think, that people are still undecided. And I think even with Sharangovich, like, I do think Calgary was a very good thing for him. But there's a part of me that kind of says, okay, I wonder if we would have, you know, gave him have a shitty year and then bring him back and see what happens, you know. And I think Holtz could be really good somewhere. I just don't know if it's going to be here.
And it's also when you're under the microscope and you're getting like 6 minutes a night and everybody is watching your shifts, that puts a lot of pressure on that kid not fuck up. Like when you're not really like, you're not just feeling the flow of the game. You're like, okay, I got to go over to this board and take this pass and win this board battle. You're not really just using your instincts and letting it flow. So I think there's a lot of that in that as well. It's a complicated situation, but I wouldn't be surprised if he shipped off as a piece. Although I don't know what his value is. You know, like, does he have value? The way they shit all over him, everyone from the top down in this organization, like you absolutely murdered his trade value. It makes no sense.
GMs watching and saying, "Hey, we can turn this guy into that."
Every head coach and every general manager thinks that, Tone. You're 100% right. They look at him and say, "Oh, look how mismanaged he was. If we had him here, we would get X and Z out of them," whatever. But, you know, and maybe they will. I mean, Sharangovich had a very good year, but, you know, like, Toffoli did what he came here to do, what we brought him here to do. None of the other players did. One of the things I did hear in the exit interviews before we get to our playoff predictions, and I don't know who said it, and it was either Brat or Green, said something along the lines of what you mentioned about taking a shot at Lindy Ruff. This seemed like a veiled shot as well, that there were guys, and I'm paraphrasing here, but the gist of it was something to the effect of, there were guys here who that were coming out to, something along the lines of, they were coming out to play, but did not know what their roles were, that they were not, however it was worded, but that was the gist of it. That's too many, some guys on this team, they were coming out here and working, they just didn't know what they were supposed to be working at. They didn't know what they were supposed to be doing. So I took that as a bit of a shot of an indictment a little bit on Lindy. Mm. So, you know, I'm fucking it up, but you can go back and listen. No, it was either Brad or Green.
I forget who said that, but I caught that too. It's the accountability thing, and then the disproportionate penalization thing as well. Right. You know, it's the same thing. But also, you know, I've seen interviews where Holtz is like, "I'm hanging out with Mercer and the Hughes brothers," and then, you know, talking about reckless speculation. You know, as you're when are you guys going to make those T-shirts? By the way.
He made a comment.
We're going to get the reckless speculation shirts.
Fitz made a comment, actually, about going out. Like, it's not that they're not going out a lot or, like, you know, very active, I guess. Like, you know, I mean, I don't know if you meant partying or not, but I think there was a comment in there, actually, Tim, that he said with going out, like, you know, there's no shortage of after game activities or some shit like that.
Yeah. And I'm sure, look, they're young. They got a lot of money. They're living in, you know, Jersey City and New York. I mean, these, of course they're going out and partying, but you do have to have, like, who's that older veteran here to come in and just kind of, you know, lay the law down as far as what goes, what doesn't go. Like, you knew you fucked around in the locker room, Scott Stevens was going to have something to say to you, you know, and it maybe took a while to get Scott Stevens to speak up, but you know, when he spoke, you did what he told you to do. We don't have that guy yet. And, you know, maybe Nico Hischier will turn into that, but they just have to grow up, you know?
Yeah. That's and I didn't get the vibe that they were playing Fortnite like Kyler Murray. Like, I think they're, these guys were, you know, I think these guys are, you know, they're going in the cities and, you know, they need a must win, but they're going out to dinner, having a couple bottles of wine. And,
well, it's so funny because, you know, back in like the, say, 90s, 2000s, all those teams, you know, they would come into Tampa even. They would all go to like, I mean, you go out there, but skate. We'll do the morning skate, then they would go out and have a few beers, then go take a nap and play the game. And it was just a whole different, like, it was no, like you said, wine. Like back then it was like Ken Danico and three others going out and during it, you know, after the morning skate and having a few. It's totally different now.
That Danico Ty Domi story where they
now they're playing video games for hours, everybody.
Nerds.
how about we do some playoff predictions?
Yeah.
All right. We're going to start in the West, okay? So what we're going to do is I got the matchups. We're going to go over who you think is going to win. Tell me and in how many games. And so we'll start with Winnipeg versus Colorado. Mm-hmm. Winnipeg went 51-24-6. They had 108 points. That was good for second in the Central. Colorado 49-25-7 for 105 points, 3 points behind Winnipeg. Third in the Central, their first 2-3 matchup. The Jets went 3-0-1 this year against the Avs. The Jets are, let me see, the Jets are favored. They are plus 115. The Avs are at a minus 138. That first series, Winnipeg, Colorado, there are so many series that are so hard for me to pick. We'll go Bob, Tib, Tony, me. Bobby, where are you going with that?
All right, well, first, I just want to preface this by saying I'm actually very disappointed in my overall picks because I'm looking at them now, and technically speaking, I don't have an upset based on the higher seed matchup, like for all 8 games, which is really shocking to me. The closest I maybe have to an upset to me is this game. I think that on the surface, most people would think Colorado. I like Colorado. I did not know Winnipeg was 3-0-1 against them this year, but this is the series I'm taking for Winnipeg to get their legs, a brutal series that gets them flowing through the playoffs. They're going to beat Colorado in 7.
Bob's got the Jets in 7. All right, Tim, what do you got?
You got the Jets in 7 too.
Tony, what do you got?
I like Tim.
Yeah, going to go with it's all goaltending.
I'm going to go with Colorado. I think the goaltending's been there. You got 38 wins with that guy. You got, you know, McCarr, McKinnon. I just picture McKinnon lighting a fire under that team's ass in the playoffs, and I picture them winning in 7 games.
You got the Avs in 7.
Yeah, Dan, I love watching McKinnon highlights. By the way, when he gets to gallop into the neutral zone, man,
he actually gets on his teammates' cases for eating bad on the road. I mean, the guy is fucking intense.
I mean, we kind of need something like that.
He's 440 points in the NHL.
Exactly. Yeah.
He's one of my favorite players to watch. But Dan also has the Jets taking. He didn't give me a number of games, so we'll get that from him later. But
I'm actually surprised by how many.
Now, Tim, you took the Jets in 7.
I was an island.
Jets in 7.
Well, I did these earlier today, so just so you know, I'm not on anyone's bandwagon. We got four. I got the Jets in seven.
I think, Colorado in seven, though.
Yeah, we all got a seven-game series.
Dan's got Colorado in seven on the text he sent.
I didn't get that text.
First, you sent just the teams, and then you said, can you give us the picks?
So,
and he's got CO7. So then he doesn't
I'm looking at the wrong thing. Okay, yep. So we got two. So he's got Colorado in seven. All right.
So everybody's going seven, all five of them.
Yeah.
That's crazy right there. That tells you it was a hard round to pick, right?
Yeah.
Bobby, I'm with you. Like, I was been looking at these for a couple of days, and I think there are two matchups that are pretty easy, but everyone else is a fucking crapshoot.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I really didn't find too many easy ones. So let me know which ones you thought were easy when we get to them.
I'm hoping that Chris's little intro to each of these games, too, will change my mind for one or two of these.
Okay.
And if it does, I'll let you know, but I don't think it's going to.
Well, we got Edmonton went 49, 26, and 6, 104 points. The Kings, 43, 27, and 11 for 97 points. So there's a 7-point swing there. Head to head, they played four games. Edmonton won three of them. The Oilers are favored. They're minus 182, and the Kings are plus 150. Bobby, who you got in the Oilers and Kings, which I think is like the just sharpie it in every preseason for round one, Kings Oilers, yeah. Right? This is like the third year in a row.
This is another one that I actually didn't like because I basically didn't write off the Kings earlier. They're just not on my mind as like a top playoff team. And then when I look at this matchup, like this is exactly the type of team that can bring Edmonton down. But I'm on the track for saying earlier in the year that I think Edmonton's going to make a little noise this year. Also didn't know they were 3-1 against them. Edmonton comes out in seven.
Edmonton in seven. What does Dan have? You can give us Dan's too.
Dan has Edmonton in six.
All right. Edmonton in six. Tim, what do you got?
Okay, Edmonton in five. I thought this was an easier pick.
You're taking this as an easy one? You just think they're going to roll them, huh?
Yeah, I think McDavid's going to steamroll them. You know, their decor is a lot better. At least they'll figure out their lines. They don't even know what their lines are.
Dubois Talbot's not going to stand on his head and steal this series.
He probably will now that I picked him in five. But
Tony, what do you got for this one?
I was going to go in five, Tim, but I'm going to go in six because I just, you know, I think Edmonton's definitely going to beat him. I just think LA is going to throw it at him as much as they can. I'm just going to – I have to say six on this one. I was at five, too, though. I was kind of thinking that. I just – with the goaltending in Los Angeles, I could picture them stealing a few. So,
I mean – everybody has Edmonton. We're going to keep it that way. I'm taking the Oilers in six for all the reasons like you guys just mentioned. And like you said, Tim, LA doesn't really even know what their lines are right now. And I just think, you know, come playoff time, just Connor McDavid. That's it. It's all I got to say. You know, yeah, they're going to win. It's going to be six. LA will win a couple because Edmonton, just every series, they seem to throw a couple of stinkers in here and there. So I give them six.
I wanted to be edgy and pick them in five. That was right.
I like
it. I should have picked them in six or seven. But.
So we got Dallas VGK. So Dallas this year, 52, 21, and 9 for 113 points. That's good for first in the Central. Nobody's talking about the Dallas Stars. And the returning, defending Stanley Cup champion, Vegas Golden Knights. Not so good of a year compared to last year.
Was that the Jesper Brad voice?
No, that was
much more froggy.
That was my little, I guess, Vince McMahon voice.
That's my Fortnite.
Yes, the Knights were 45, 28, and 8. I don't do a Jesper Bratt voice. They were good for 98 points. They're wild card two, head-to-head. Three games they played. Dallas won two. Vegas won one. But the two wins were in overtime. So just, so, you know, three of their games, or two of the three games went to OT. Dallas is favored. They're minus 130. The Knights are a plus 108. This series, Bobby, I know you're big on Dallas. I've been
big on
all
Dallas.
Year.
That was my Stanley Cup pick last year. I think they've been excellent again this year. It's hard to you know, take the defending Stanley Cup champions and write them out in the first round. But I did get the pleasure of seeing Dallas whoop up on Colorado live, and I was so impressed. It made my decision that much easier. I'm going to go with Dallas in six, which is also exactly what Dan is picking.
Tim, what do you got?
Yeah, I think Bobby and I might have the identical brackets. But Dallas in six.
You got Dallas in six?
Six. Sorry about that squeal. I just wheeled over my dog's leg accidentally.
Oh, he just killed his dog.
My dog, Tony, what do you got? I feel like it's right behind me.
Nice.
Way to go. I'm going to change it up and go. I'm going to go Dallas in seven. It's really – Dallas is interesting because I don't even think they have a 30-goal scorer on that team this year. But they're right? I think that
– Largely the same.
Jason Robertson is like the – I think Robertson had like 29 goals for them, which was like the most for Dallas. But I'm going to go with Dallas, yeah. I'm going to go seven, though, just because Vegas, you know – Look, I think they'll turn it on in the playoffs a little bit more.
Vegas has played a lot of hockey these last couple of years, and I think that matters. I do think that not having Mark Stone is going to be an issue this year in the postseason. Look, Tony, you're the one
who was coming back.
What?
I read an article that there's another one of those. He's skating again, and everyone's like, of course he is. Just in time for the playoffs
really?
Again. Started skating last week.
Because they said when his injury happened, he was not going to be back for the playoffs.
Exactly. But of course, he's ready for the playoffs.
Scumbags.
We'll see if he makes the lineup. But yeah.
Like, people aren't realizing this is just the way that Vegas gives their old players.
Oh, no,
rest.
They're realizing it. That's why everyone's putting up, waving the what the fuck flag.
Well, now I should change my pick from the Stars to six to the Stars in four. Fuck them.
And remember, Chris, for Tampa, people were saying the same thing about playing too many games. Those years they were winning their cups, like, oh, they've played too many games. Sometimes it doesn't matter.
My theory on that.
I get it. I do think it does matter. And sometimes, you know, look, it's probably not going to matter in this series, you know, but when you're a team like Tampa who, hey, look, 3 years in a row, they made it to the finals, played more hockey than anyone else. The next year they bounced in the first round. So, yeah, I do think eventually it does catch up to you.
But I'll take two cups for that.
Absolutely. Yeah, and three final appearances? Hell yeah.
Sorry, go ahead, Chris. I apologize. I got in the middle of
you. No, I was just saying the Stars in six. I just think they have – I like Jake Oettinger. Aiden Hill was great last year. We'll see how he does this year. But I just think Dallas is primed. There are a lot of veterans on that team, and they're going to be a really tough out. So Dallas in six.
Chris, which leads us. It's funny. On my notes, I put my little notes on here, and literally my notes for Vegas was fuck them.
Okay, I like it. So fuck them is right. And then we go to Vancouver, Nashville. This is another one that's, I think it's kind of tough, but Vancouver was 50-22-9, 109 points. That was good for first in the Pacific. Nashville is the first wild card with 47-30-5, 99 points, fourth in the Central. They played three games this year. Excuse me. Vancouver won two. I don't have the odds for that one for some reason, but anyway, Bobby, what do you got in this series?
This is tough for me because the way I wound up picking it, because I like Nashville a lot. I would have liked Nashville in probably any other matchup, but I'm giving this one just straight to Vancouver in five.
Wow.
Which is Dan's as well.
This is so crazy.
I didn't talk to him.
No. I don't even like to talk to him. I'm looking at what I put, which you can probably guess. But Vancouver, Tim, what do you got? What do you got, Tim?
Oh, sorry. I was just laughing. You guys share a brain now.
Apparently.
I got Vancouver in six. I think the big issue is if Demko is going to be healthy, and he's healthy. So.
All right, yeah. What do we got, Tone?
Go Vancouver in six also.
I just want the, as much as I like Andrew Burnett, I just want this good fortune of his to end. All right, I'm just really tired of watching the could have beens of you know, moving on in the playoffs. I got Vancouver in five. I still, you know, that little Hughes connection. Demko is a very good goalie, and I think UC Soros is a very good goalie. But I'm going Vancouver. I'm going to take
a lower price for Soros for us, right?
I do like that Forsberg though over there in Nashville.
He's great.
He's good. Yeah. He's a good player.
He's got a hell of a mustache.
If Quinn reads a ring, he's going to be flashing that shit in Jack and Luke's face, and it's going to make them so fired up. I would not mind seeing him win a ring.
Yeah. That would be you know what? You're 100% right. I'm real curious how they, because there is that competitive brother edge.
Oh, you know Jack and Luke are currently always on his ass about being drafted before him. Like he was 1-4 instead he was 7, right, Quinn? So you know they're busting his balls about that, and he's going to come up with Stanley Cup ring.
He's going to have a ring in the Norris Trophy.
And
well, last year he was sitting in the stands watching his brothers play. So
that's true.
All right, we're moving on to the East. All right, we'll start with Carolina, New York Islanders. Carolina was 52-23-7. They were 111 points, second in the Metro. To the New York Islanders, 39-27-16, 94 points was good for third in the Metro. Devils should feel really good about themselves. Canes took the season series 2-1-1. Canes are a big favorite at -350. Isles are +275. Bobby, what do you got for that series?
Islanders don't deserve to be in the playoffs for what it's worth. I mean, the points are way too easy this year. And this is coming from a Devils fan whose team didn't make the playoffs with even less points. But because of that, and just because I think Carolina's a juggernaut, yeah, Carolina in 5. And
Tim. Or Dan. What's Dan got?
Dan is Carolina in 6.
Okay. Tim, what do you got?
I think this is a buy for Carolina. I have Carolina in 5.
Thought you were going to go 4.
No.
Everybody's scared of 4.
Right? I will say, you know what? I will change that. Carolina sweeps.
Ooh, that's what I got.
All right.
Yeah, nice.
That's what I got. What do you
this
got, John?
This is one of the easy matches. I just do not see how
Islanders
even win a game.
I'm with you.
I don't even know.
Real Carolina in 6. I'm going to disappoint you all and say I definitely think Carolina is going to, you know, definitely beat them. It's funny. The Devils had such a rough season that I actually didn't even pay too much attention to Carolina this year because we were just trying to save our ass every week to stay, lower than that. So, I mean, you know, like you said, 52 wins. Islanders, I just, you know, it's a lose team. I think they'll squeak out 1 or 2, steal it. Okay. I have to mention, because I always like to mention former Devils, man, Palmieri. I was glad he scored 30 goals this year. You know, I mean.
I hate Kyle Palmieri.
Oh, I like Palmieri,
and
man.
I like him with facial hair.
It's weird, isn't it? I like Palmieri a lot, man. But obviously Carolina's a lot better. But I just picture the Islanders, you know, in the playoffs, I think you steal a game or two usually. It just happens.
Look, the Islanders play a really annoying, frustrating system, especially over a 7-game series. I do think that they would have maybe a little bit more better, a little better fortune playing any of the other 7 teams,
yes.
6 teams rather, other than Carolina. But if there's one team that can wait you out, and just wait for you think you play a really good system? Well, we play it just a little bit better. I'm going to go Carolina in 4. There is no way that they're going to come in. Carolina is going to, they're not going to look past this series. They're going to take it very serious. And I think it's just going to be business as usual. And they're going to go in and take care of it. So that's why I got the Kings.
Also, who are the Islanders starting in goal?
Sorokin has been playing great.
Yeah.
And Varlamov is playing good. That's a good question. I have something to say about Sorokin,
but Varlamov's been objectively better than him.
Yeah.
Yes. I do want to ask you guys something about goalies, but I'm going to wait till we get to the one of the other series to do it. So we all have the Canes winning. I think so far we all have pretty much picked the same teams, right? What do we have?
Any me and different? Dan have Colorado.
Two differences on Colorado.
On the Colorado one. And we all have Edmonton. We all have Dallas. We all have Vancouver.
This might be a boring playoff for the Tucker Show.
Well, you know, let's see. Boston versus Toronto. Another regurgitated 2-3 series. Boston this year, good season, but nowhere near what they did last year. 47-20-15 for 109 points. That was good for second in the Atlantic. Toronto was 46-26-10, 102 points, a 7-point swing. They were third in the Atlantic. Boston swept the season series. 2 of the wins were in overtime, but they swept the season series. Boston is favored -120. Toronto's +100. Bobby, we'll start with you.
This is the one I was hoping you were maybe going to sway me to do something different. Last year, I was all about Toronto finally getting through a round, and they did. This year, I'm just not impressed with them. They're all offense. They just don't strike me as a team that's going to go far. And Boston's tough, so I was hoping you were going to give me a stat that made me flip this to Toronto, but I'm going to stick with Boston, but I'll make it in seven.
Okay.
Dan is Toronto in seven.
Oh.
Tim's chair
farted.
That was my chair. That was my chair.
Sure.
It's okay if you did.
Sure it was.
Nobody's listening.
You're not listening. I can edit that and make it a lot louder. Don't worry about it.
Now you're going to edit.
I take all your racist shit out, Bobby.
We have to censor Bobby.
I say, Bobby's. Yeah, we have to censor Bobby every episode.
Saturday night shows. Oh my god! Cuts when I'm listening to you guys.
Yeah, we've had a few moments.
What'd you say?
Like, no, they just cut Bobby off in the middle of what he was saying. That's weird.
Sometimes Bobby doesn't.
What was he saying? He was just about to talk about. Never mind. I don't know. It sounded like it could have been good. It wasn't good. Rhyming. Trust me. It was
horrible. No rhyming, Bobby. They throw me off my game all the time, Tim. It pisses me off.
It is fun to do. Don't make it so easy.
I gotta stop looking at you. Just Tim, go like this.
Boston, Toronto.
I got Toronto in six.
Oh shit.
Yeah, I think they got over the hump last year. I don't like Boston's forward depth. They're Pastrnak, and that's it, you know?
All right.
You know, similar to Vegas, fuck Pavel Zacha. Like, are you kidding? He's their 1C. Like, get out of here. If they win, if they miss 1C with Palmieri, Sharon Govich, and Coleman all scoring 30 goals, I'm going to go walk into the woods and never come.
Sharon Govich isn't going to score any goals for them.
No, he's really? Not. He's going to be making Lego sandcastles and shit like that. Lego sandcastles? Did I really say that?
Sure.
What's happening right now?
I don't know. Tony's going to pick his Boston-Toronto series. We're going to move on.
I'm going to go Boston and seven. As much as I would like to see the future Devil, hopefully Bertuzzi win the series with Toronto, I'm going to have to take Boston just because I wanted to say Toronto, but it just seems to be some bad luck in the playoffs over there.
Yeah, I know they got over the hump last year, but I think that hump rears its ugly, humpy head again.
That's what I'm feeling.
They lose in the first round to Boston in six. I think that overall, talent-wise, Toronto's a better team. I also think Toronto suffers from some of the same things that the Devils suffered from this year, and I just think that they're not – again, Boston is that workman-like business team. They're not going to take anything for granted. There's no bullshit with them. So I think it's going to be Boston in six.
Well, Toronto's not a playoff team. They don't scream playoff team to you going into a series. So it's
no. I just think they're, you know, a team that they could take them out and plug them in any other team in. But and also, fuck Toronto. I can't stand them.
I like that that's a justification for a lot of these. Yeah, fuck those guys.
We can just do that.
Yeah, exactly. We'll wait till we get to the last series.
I'm glad you brought up Bertuzzi. The Devils really need a prick like him.
Yeah, I guess. Do. I'm still.
We've been saying that for 2 years. But that's two not going to
happen.
But I'd love to have Brady. Yeah, we just need a prick like Claude Lemieux. Yep. You know, a guy like that.
Brady Tkachuk would change this. I mean, he would change the whole team. I mean, you know, like I said. Yeah, that's a whole that to me that of anybody out there of make a change, I think he would make a huge change on this team because in the locker room, you know, outside the locker room, and definitely on the ice.
But would you be happy with Tkachuk Light and Tyler Bertuzzi?
Yeah, we were all bummed out when Bertuzzi didn't come here last year. We all kind of thought that maybe they would pull it off, but you know, so yeah, I would take Bertuzzi.
He's
21 goals this year, right?
He doesn't use tape on a stick. He doesn't have a knob on a stick. Like, that's real unhinged lunatic behavior.
I like Bertuzzi. But yeah, I'm still going with Boston. So maybe Fitzgerald will be able to talk to him in about 2 weeks and see if he's interested. Yep. I know that, you know, July is when it happens, but Panthers Lightning, the battle of America's Wang.
It'll be a hell of a series, though. It's going to be the nastiest series for the first round, I think.
It's going to be a good one, and it's going to be Panthers 52-24-6, 110 points first in the Atlantic. Lightning 45-29-8, 98 points, the first wild card, fourth in the Atlantic. Florida won the season series 2-1. Florida is minus 176, Tampa Bay is plus 146. The Battle of Florida, Bobby.
So I have flipped this one so many times. Initially, it's just boom, it's Florida, not a problem. Then it's like, this is one of those series where Tampa can kind of upset that upstart, you know, Panther team. One more kick of the can for Tampa. But in my heart of hearts, I just cannot go against the Panther team and what I see from them. So I have to take them. I'll make it look good and give it to them in seven. We're going to see a good series.
What's Dan got?
Dan has the Florida in seven.
Okay.
Panthers in seven. But they're both in Florida. Well, for anyone not paying attention.
One's Tampa, though.
Right.
What do you got, Tim?
I got Florida in seven. I went with Bobby. Florida's a bunch of bullies. You know, yeah. Tampa's a little bit more perimeter. Vasilevsky had a terrible year for Vasilevsky.
He was coming on. Yeah.
He let in some softies, but I mean, look, I wouldn't bet against him in the playoffs, but well, you know, I just did. but I don't know. I think Tampa's little run is over. Stamkos will be out the door this.
Okay. What do you got, Tone?
To go with Florida and seven also. It's hard for me because I do believe that Tampa does have a chance to win the series just the same. I feel like Florida has a little bit of an edge. I just can't count. Like Kucherov to me, like 140 points. This guy's been – and we talked about Braden Point recently too, another guy who would never gets mentioned enough, another guy who would be awesome in New Jersey.
Yeah, I love him.
Yeah, Braden Point. And, you know, Vasilevsky – you know, see, Tim, I lived in Tampa for a bunch of years, so I spent a lot of the games there. I can't not count, like, even in the playoffs, the guy is a monster. You know, he's just a great goaltender. He's one of the, to me, he's the second best in the league.
But you're the guy we're going to talk about coming taking up. Taking your time defending your pick. Like,
but I have to,
sure
it's hard one. This one was really
Florida
hard. Yeah. I'm going to go with Florida just because of the Tkachuk factor. That's the major, you know, and obviously, Reinhardt's what? That guy's been killing it this year. Yeah. And Florida's just, I think they're a little nastier, actually. I'm in.
Florida is an amazing team. They're a pain in the ass team. We got
I like the coach.
Four of you guys.
I love Maurice.
Yeah, I like him too, but I also like John Cooper a lot. And you guys all took Florida in seven. The run for Tampa is not over. The Lightning win this thing in six, and Vasilevsky proves that he's the best fucking goalie in the world. That's where I'm going.
I was with you, buddy, and then I couldn't go against the Panthers. I just really couldn't.
How many penalty minutes are going to be in this series?
Oh, my God.
That's going to be nuts.
And I even got them in six. If it gets to seven, that seventh game is going to be so much fun.
It might be the best series of all of them, I think.
This is the most appointment. That Dallas-Vegas one is going to be really good, but I think this is the most appointment viewing of all of them.
When's his first game?
Sunday, right?
Is it Sunday?
I believe it's Sunday.
I'll tape it and I'll watch it when I get home from work, which leads us to the final series, the New York Rangers versus the Washington Capitals, the President's Trophy winning New York Rangers. I wonder how Bissonnette feels about Rangers are frauds and so are their fans and this and that. Well, they just won the President's Trophy with 55-23-4, 114 points. Capitals are 40-31-11, 91 points. Wild card 2. That should make Devil fans feel even better. They split the season series. They're 2-2. The Rangers are favored. They're -375. The Caps are getting +290. I'm sure these lines already moved, so don't hold me to any of them. The final series of our playoff prediction, Bobby, what do you got?
Love to say Washington's going to come in here with the momentum to make that awfully hard to get 91 point second wild card playoff spot and upset the Rangers, but I gotta give the Rangers their due. There just should be no way they lose this series. Rangers in six.
Okay. Tim? Or Dan?
Dan first. Is Rangers in six.
Tim?
I have the Washington Capitals in six.
Do tell. Why?
What do you
is
smoke?
This just a fuck Ranger pick?
Which is acceptable, by the way.
We're fine with that.
You know, like the pie chart, the blog that you wrote there, the pie chart, you know, yeah. I'd say maybe 70% is fuck the Rangers.
Right.
But
I like the callback.
Since the, I read your shit.
Thank you.
From the All-Star break, the Capitals have been one of the best teams in the league. That goal differential that everybody keeps talking about was largely from the beginning of the season. When they lost early in the season, they got the doors blown off. but they win 2-1 games, and they won a lot of them coming down the stretch. And Charlie Lindgren has been fucking unbelievable. So I have 96 of his last 97 shots. I did a lot of research on this series, so buckle up. I think the Rangers are soft. Like, they're bad at 5-on-5. The only thing that could derail my pick is if the Capitals take a lot of bad penalties, because their penalty killing sucks and the Rangers fire plays the lead. But if they stay out of the box, I think the Capitals can pull this off. And also, I saw that picture of Ovechkin the other day where he's getting interviewed. He has a beanie on, and it's like sweaters like down to here, and he has like a gold chain. He's just a menace, that guy. I have a soft spot for Ovi because the area that I live in now, like, I just fucking love that guy. But I think they can do it. You know, they've won the cup before. I just think the Rangers are missing something. Even though they won so much, I just don't feel like they have it. And Shesterkin's back, which is kind of annoying. I was really hoping, you know, his collapse would be a full season, but I see the Caps pulling this off.
Okay. What do you got, Tone?
Fortunately, I'm going to go with the Rangers in six. I think Shesterkin is probably the best goalie in hockey, in my opinion. And I think you have backup now. You got Quick. Something past Shesterkin. You got a guy who just pulled a rabbit out of his ass this year. Quick has been great. As much as I hate them, I just don't think the Washington has what it takes to beat them. I think the fact that Washington's in the playoffs is kind of disgusting because, you know, we all saw the bottom of that division this year flip-flopping, and it's just a shame. So I'm going to have to go with the Rags in six, unfortunately. And I hope I'm wrong.
This is the Lindgren Cup, huh? This is
hope we're wrong.
I mean,
Chris is taking Washington, isn't he?
I am taking Washington.
Nice.
And it's not just because of a fuck you Rangers.
Which is 70% acceptable.
Right, Tim? Well, it's actually might be 71.
Fair enough.
But regardless of that, I believe there's – now, what I'm about to say is a little bit counterproductive because I did not take the first seed in the West to lose their playoff series against the second wild card. But I am – there's something to be said for a team like the Rangers who have basically played – they played very good hockey all year long. They were never out of first place. From like the third week of the season, they had Carolina pressing them very, very, you know, a couple of points, but then they just took it off. There's something to be said for that team that has been playing, you know, playoff hockey for the last 5-6 weeks, that every point was important to them. And Washington plays the most annoying, boring, really hard to watch hockey that I've seen ever. And the Rangers are the complete opposite. And I'm sorry, in the playoff series, in a 7-game series, the way Washington plays will frustrate the shit out of the Rangers enough that they will lose in game 7. I'm going to take the Capitals. Look, I'm not like Tim. I do not like Ovechkin. I am no way, shape, or form a Washington Capitol fan. And I do hate the Rangers. But I just think if the Rangers are going to go on a run, I think it's going to be on the back of Jonathan Quick, not Igor Shesterkin. I just think, you know, look, Jonathan Quick knows what he's doing come playoff time. And I love Shesterkin, I think, but he's got to win it for me to put him up in that top. He's got to play for it at least before I can put him in the top echelon. He's a fantastic goalie. And I'm not saying Lindgren is. I think Washington gets bounced in the second round to Boston is what I believe. But I think this series, I just think they're going to frustrate the shit out of the Rangers. And I think it's going to fucking really get under their skin, which we've seen before. The Devils did it last year. When they start getting a little bit frustrated, they start playing a little bit on tilt. I think that has a possibility of happening.
So my only issue with your assessment there is I don't see the Capitals as being that team that fought for every last point to squeak into the playoffs. I see them as a team that was a benefactor of a very easy into the playoffs that some other better team should have got into. I don't think they're on this amazing run like the Panthers year.
I don't think they're on an amazing
run. I think they're going to be done after the second.
I think they are done, but I think that their style of playing, like, if I'm the Rangers, I think that might have been out of all those teams that were vying for that second wild card, I think this might have been the series that you didn't want. the most.
You've actually been preaching that for about 2 months now, too.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. I think that the Rangers beat the Red Wings. I think the Rangers would have beaten us. The Rangers would have beaten who else was up for that last wild card spot? The Flyers. I think the Rangers would have beaten them all, but I just think Washington, they just play such a – they can fucking lull you to sleep is how boring they are.
Yeah. You know what's crazy about Washington is – you know what the highest points were for Washington? I have a player on that team for the season?
Probably what, Tom Wilson?
67. That was the highest points a player had with Strome, yeah. It's pretty crazy, you know. I mean, Ovechkin was 65. Ovechkin had a weird year this year, though.
Would any of you guys be shocked if Ovechkin just becomes old Ovechkin in his playoffs? Like, he hasn't been there in 2 years. I mean, this dude is going to be ready for the playoffs.
I wouldn't be surprised. I just don't think Washington's good enough.
There probably is a lot of bias in my pick, but still, I think there's a chance.
There's definitely a lot of bias in your pick, because I knew before we put these picks in that you were absolutely taking the Capitals. I just knew it. So, and that's fine. It's cool. I wish I had that kind of balls. I just in my heart of hearts, I'm like, I think the Rangers, they have to get through this round or they are the worst presence team ever.
Chris, I kind of knew you were going to take the Caps too. It's kind of like devil you know with Dan. You kind of know he's not going to be ready. I kind of knew you were going to go with the Capitals. You know, there's certain things you could bet on this show that is pretty obvious, you know.
I hope I'm right.
I hope you're right too.
Hey, we all hope you're right. That's the nice thing about it, you know.
You and Tim have a party.
Chris, I think you're right. Like, I mean, I hope they win just, you know, for everything that comes along with that. But they're going to get fucking dummied by Carolina in the second round.
Oh, no doubt.
And I think, you know, Carolina, after the Islanders, and then if the Caps get in, they have a pretty easy path.
Maybe Florida.
Nothing's easy.
Florida versus until Florida. Tampa or the Panthers, and you know that's going to be the Eastern Conference Final, I think.
Yeah. It won't be watched on TV, but it will be good hockey.
I can see the Rangers making it to, you know, a Cup Final. I could totally. Their team is really good. There's certain, like you said, Tim, 5-on-5. There's things about it, like that team. There's something about them I don't trust. You know, in the playoffs is what I'm saying. It's like, I mean, they might prove me wrong. I mean, Peter Laviolette is a very good coach, and he's going to have them ready, and you're dealing with a first-year coach in Spencer Carberry down in Washington. You know, maybe that definitely – well, that definitely favors the Rangers, but maybe that'll be something that decides the series. I do think that Jonathan Quick in the playoffs does give them a better chance of winning the Cup than Igor Shesterkin. I think, you know, a lot of people would think I'm nuts, but you know, I look at a guy who this year played like he was fucking 10 years younger – and has the pedigree. And this guy, all he does is win Stanley Cups.
There's one thing that everybody can guarantee. The MSG is going to be full of a bunch of schmucks.
Oh, yeah.
Next coming week. So.
I think on that note, we're going to wrap it up. It's getting a little bit late. And Tim, since you joined us tonight and you have this life-changing platform, is there anybody you want to say hello to, you want to thank, you want to?
No, not really. I don't know anybody that actually listens to you guys.
You got an OnlyFans page or anything going on here?
Just follow me on Twitter if you feel like stupid jokes about shit and the devil stuff and occasional Yankee stuff. Tim Wood, WUUD. I got their name from a bartender at a strip club who didn't exactly speak English. Because she was looking at my card. She was like, Mr. Tim Wood. I was like, what? Wood? You mean Wood? And she was like, Wood, Mr. Wood. And so that became my name for everything.
You're Mr. Wood. Now I gotta go. Now I gotta take this racist shit out. Jesus.
she was from the Eastern Bloc. She was not.
Tony, what's your wife's name? Is she working at Go-Go Bar?
Yeah. No.
Well, on that note,
I'm fucking talking now.
Dude, stop it. And Tim, thank you so much for coming.
No, thanks for having me, guys.
This was a lot of fun.
Yeah, it was fun.
But Tim, when you send those adult photos, can you send them over to Chris's Instagram privately? We all got to see them in the fucking Uncle Pucker page.
I'll just tag you and everything.
Thanks, man.
Link in bio.
Yes. You're more than welcome to come on anytime that you want, man. This was a lot of fun.
We'll see the carnage after all of our first round picks are all wrong.
No matter what, we're going to get you in after the first round. So you come back on and we'll do our second rounds and revamp them and just see how bad most of us did. So But
well, when I started putting those picks in, I was like, oh man, these are great picks, and then none of them happened. I was like, oh man, this is kind of hard.
This is hard.
It's every week for us.
Yeah, exactly. It's really hard
every week.
especially if Ryan Graves comes back
with that RY tattoo,
pumping that sock.
It's an RY tattoo. All right. On that note, we're going to wrap it up. Thank you guys so much for checking us out. Wherever you're listening to us, a like, a subscription, a 5-star review helps us push along this little podcast that could. For Bobby and Tony and our guest Tim tonight, I'm Chris. We're the Uncle Puckers. We'll see you when we see you.
Thanks, guys.
Bye-bye.
Peace.